So how bad would Hillary Clinton be as president of the United States?
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Who are these Democrats?
It really goes back to this idea of social engineering and social control. In America, we called it progressivism. Soviet Union, they called it communism.
The whole purpose of the Democratic Party was to reestablish white supremacy. The racism continued well into the 20th century. Sometimes the violence intensified. Other times, the racism merely changed forms. Almost everything they did had a racist motive.
Those are some very strong claims. In a few minutes, you'll get to hear Dinesh D'Souza, the man behind Hillary's America, the man behind the movie from which that quote just came. This is Michael Brown. I am delighted to be with you. My allegiance is to the kingdom of God. I am not a registered Republican. I'm not a registered Democrat. I'm registered as an independent. Now, you might say, well, my allegiance is to the kingdom, speaking for yourself, but I'm registered Democrat, Republican. Fine. That I'm not saying you have to be independent or you can't be libertarian or identify with another party or constitutional party, whichever party it may be. I'm simply saying that our ultimate allegiance is to the kingdom of God. And we cannot divide within the body over politics. We have to stand for issues. We have to stand for truth. If we divide over issues, so be it. If we divide over our understanding of truth, so be it. If we divide over our understanding of foundations of the faith, so be it. But we don't divide over politics or other things that are secondary. We look at the real issues, and that's what we're devoted to do here on The Line of Fire. So if you take issue, if you have a problem, if you feel that what I'm discussing is not fair, if you feel that ultimately my position smacks of political bias rather than kingdom allegiance, by all means, let me know why. Number to call, 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. Before I bring Dinesh D'Souza onto The Line of Fire, a couple of other things to mention to you. This week, we are focusing especially on issues having to do with atheism. We had Ray Comfort on yesterday in the second hour, and he's got a new DVD out, The Atheist Delusion. And what's really neat today is things are so instant. Of course, there's a drawback with our instant society in many ways. But we can announce this on the radio. Folks can go to our website, download the DVD. And by the way, so you download the video. By the way, 50% of everything that comes in through the Atheist Delusion on our website, Ray Comfort's ministry is donating back to our ministry. So you're blessing us as you're being blessed yourselves. But what's neat is that people can immediately download this. So I've talked about it on the radio yesterday. Folks download it. It's a 60-minute DVD, The Atheist Delusion, with incredible changes and eyes opening in front of your eyes. And then within a few hours, they're tweeting out or posting on Facebook, watching this video. It's incredible. You need to get it. So check it out on the website, The Atheist Delusion, a great practical tool. Yes, it'll build your faith as a believer, but it's great to show to friends who identify as atheists or agnostics or maybe believers who lost their faith. Great to show to them. And you can find out more by going to my website, Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org. All right, bottom line for me. Bottom line for me, and I just tweeted this out. The greatest need in America today is for the church to be the church as Jesus intended it to be. The greatest need in America today is for the church to be the church as Jesus intended it to be. That's my bottom line. That's my ultimate contention. We'll be right back with Dinesh D'Souza talking about his blockbuster controversial movie, Hillary's America, The Secret History of the Democratic Party. Give
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
While Hillary Clinton was Secretary of State, the Clintons took hundreds of millions of dollars from foreign entities.
The fact is, we had four dead Americans. What difference at this point does it make?
These are clips from Dinesh D'Souza's Hillary's America, The Secret History of the Democratic Party, both a best-selling book and a blockbuster movie. And for the first time, Dinesh, great to have you on the Line of Fire. Thanks so much for joining us.
It's a pleasure. It's good to be on the show.
Well, thank you. You probably don't know this, but you and I have in common that we both debated Bart Ehrman on the problem of suffering. Just for your information, I think my debate was after yours, but we both interacted with him on that. So appreciate
Very
your work.
Very interesting. Yes. I've enjoyed crossing swords with Bart a couple of times on that topic, on a couple of different college campuses. And that's part of my work in Christian apologetics.
Yeah, excellent. Yeah, we did ours at Ohio State University, had a great turnout. In fact, on the apologetics end, finishing up a Job commentary on my end, and I've got your godforsaken book on my shelf to go through and interact on theodicy. But that's another discussion for another day. Dinesh, you're a serious scholar. You're involved in apologetics. You get into these super controversial, hot-button issues that actually come with a bit of a personal cost. What is it that motivates you to put out these books, these movies that are so controversial?
Well, I'm an immigrant to the United States, and I came from a country, India, that is a third world country with a lot of corruption, a lot of bribery. The country is sort of run by gangs. You get a glimpse of it in the movie Slumdog Millionaire. So I came to America to live in a completely different place, a place where there are ladders of opportunity, where how far you get in life depends on luck, but it also depends on your own creativity and your own efforts. So I have sort of, you may say, fallen in love with the American dream. And I see that American dream as endangered, and endangered by a political movement and now a political party that is out for itself and is up to no good. So for me, American politics isn't just a sort of an academic debate. It's ultimately about people's lives and people's own future. And so I see myself as fighting to protect that American dream that has meant so much in my own life. And that's part of what makes me so determined and a little bit fearless.
Mm. Now, you know that there are all types of conspiratorial theories out there when it comes to the Clintons. And people will say, look at this trail of dead bodies, and anyone who speaks against them ends up dying. And then you can check the internet for the latest new theory. What you're opening up, though, is not some conspiracy theory. You're opening up something that's larger. It sounds like a conspiracy theory. I mean, after all, you're talking about Hillary's plan to steal America. What makes you so sure that you're presenting documented facts here and not just the latest internet conspiracy?
Well, I think I have a good track record on all this. 4 years ago, I made a movie about Obama. I stayed away from the birth or controversy of whether he was born in Kenya or not. I focused on who Obama really is. I called him out as somebody who doesn't see America from the inside out. He's almost like a kind of a self-appointed world figure who is looking at America to see if America's demands on him are reasonable and whether he should agree. I made predictions about Obama that have come true. With the Clintons, we're not dealing with unknown figures. These people have been around. They've been running rackets since the Arkansas days. When the Clintons were in the White House, they were renting out the Lincoln bedroom for money. They were picking pictures and curios off the walls and the cabinets. They were selling pardons to big-time racketeers and felons. There's a documented trail here. And also remember, these are people who have never had a private sector job really in their life. They've been on a government salary since they started out, ever since Hillary left the Rose Law Firm in Arkansas. So how do you go from zero to $300 million on a government salary? There's no legitimate way to do that. So I'm raising, I think, fair questions about the Clintons. I do so in a very factual way. And there are claims in the movie, and if they startle people, the documentation is all in the book called Hillary's America. So I stand behind my work. No one has been able to shake a single fact in the book or the movie. And that's what makes the work controversial, but true.
Mm. What type of pushback have you experienced in your personal life because of these stands you've taken?
Well, when I made the Obama film 4 years ago, Obama himself railed against the movie on his website, barackobama.com. And a few weeks later, the FBI came banging on my door, accusing me of a technical violation of the campaign finance law. As a result of that, I spent 8 months in a confinement center under the supervision of the Bureau of Prisons of the Obama administration. But look, I took that lemon. I tried to make it into lemonade. I tried to learn from that experience. I put it right in this new movie. It becomes part of my story. So I've tried to respond to adversity in an uncomplaining way, widening my horizon and my insights, and in some ways not being deterred from speaking out at all.
Got it. But you understand that there are consequences when you do speak out. You understand that firsthand. I've watched over the years that white evangelicals are largely connected to the Republican Party, for better or worse. Even the moral majority really hitched itself to the Republican Party rather than just saying, hey, these are moral values we hold to as Christians, and if you want our vote, you need to come over to us. Largely, white evangelicals have hitched themselves to the Republican Party. Conversely, black evangelicals have largely hitched themselves to the Democratic Party, and they might say, listen, we don't like redefining marriage, we don't like abortion, but we feel that the Democrats are the party that really understands our larger needs and larger concerns and reaches out to us in a holistic way. Your take on that and what you present in this movie would be the exact opposite of that. So speak to my listeners that think that it's the Christian thing to do to identify with the Democratic Party, especially when it comes to racial sensitivity.
You know, I think that some people think that the white Southern evangelicals reflect the fact that racism is somehow now in the Republican Party. But I think that I am able to document in the book that as the South became less racist, it became more Republican. There's an inverse connection between racism in the South and the South moving to the Republican ranks. And there's a whole body of work on this. Now, blacks began to defect from the Republican to the Democratic Party, but it was not because of civil rights. This movement actually began in the 1930s because of the promises and provisions of the New Deal. And so the Democratic Party at that time was very much the party of segregation and the Ku Klux Klan. And many blacks who left the Republican Party knew that they were leaving the party of emancipation and Abraham Lincoln and the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendment and joining the party of the Klan. So it was a very bizarre decision. And I think now, almost 100 years later, we can see it was a terrible decision because look at the poverty of our inner cities. I even call them urban plantations in the movie because in some ways they're no better off than they were 30 or 40 years ago. The conditions of life are very difficult there. In some ways, they even resemble some of the features of the old slave plantations.
Now, do you feel that this is something intentional that's been done by Democratic leaders to keep the black population down?
Well, it's done intentionally in this sense, that just as in the slavery days, the Democrats who ran those plantations, they cared about only one thing, and that was free labor. And what I mean by that is that slavery is a form of theft. You're stealing another man's labor for life. And that was the main concern of the people who were doing it, the plantation owners and the overseers. That's what they cared about. I want this guy's labor. Now, today, you might say that they want these guys' votes. That's what they want. That is all that they want. They don't want your labor anymore. In fact, they prefer you not to work. If you work, you might improve your condition and then walk off the plantation. So they'd rather have you confined, and they want your votes, and they have your votes because you're dependent on them for food, for health care, and so on. So the Democrats have created this dependent class, and they have them just where they want them. So to me, it's no accident that the inner city is in the same miserable condition it was 40 years ago. Every time someone proposes to change it, a gentrification scheme, let's bring in lofts, high-tech companies, Starbucks, people will have ladders of opportunity, the progressives fight bitterly against it because they want to keep these places the way they are.
All right. And friends, if you're skeptical of that, Dinesh is not just throwing these things up for random discussion. They're documented in his book, Hillary's America, The Secret History of the Democratic Party, and These are some of the foundations that are behind the movie Hillary's America. To find out more, you can go to HillarysAmericaTheMovie.com. There's no punctuation in that. HillarysAmericaTheMovie.com. Dinesh, 30 seconds before the break, what kind of responses have you gotten to the movie and the book?
What's really funny is if you go on the critical site called Rotten Tomatoes, you find that we have a critical rating of 4% and an audience rating of 85%. I've never seen such a wide spread between progressive critics who are trying to debunk the movie and cause people not to see it and audiences that love it.
That's incredible. Yeah, I've never heard of a disparity like that. And if you know Rotten Tomatoes, 85% from the audience is high, 4% from the critics, that's unbelievably low. What does that tell you? We'll be right back with Dinesh D'Souza, the movie and the book, Hillary's America.
Of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Who are these Democrats? It's time to go behind the curtain and discover the soul of the Democratic Party.
That was the voice of Dinesh D'Souza. His new movie and book, Hillary's America, The Secret History of the Democratic Party. All right, Dinesh, take us behind the scenes and tell us about the soul of the Democratic Party.
Well, the Democratic Party is a party that has been the perpetrator of the worst deeds of American history. Now, this is not well known because the Democrats and the progressives have been so clever at covering up their crimes. And in fact, they are geniuses at blaming their crimes on other people. And so, for example, the Democrats were responsible for Indian relocation on the Trail of Tears. They threw the Indians off their land in violation of treaties. So if you ask them about this today, they'll say, well, you know, that was America. America did horrible things to the Indians. Well, it wasn't America who did those things. The Democrats did them. Slavery. The Democratic Party, North and South, was the unified protector of slavery. The Republican Party, the opposite. The fighter against slavery. After the Civil War, though, the Democrats said, well, the slavery battle really wasn't between the Republicans and Democrats. It was between the North and the South. So they were able to redefine the slavery battle to blame the South. And then the Democrats go on to be the party of segregation and Jim Crow. Every segregation law in America was passed by a Democratic legislature, signed by a Democratic governor. For 30 years, the Ku Klux Klan was the domestic terrorist arm of the Democratic Party. This is not my words. It's the words of the progressive historian Eric Foner. In the 1930s, the Democrats were in bed with fascism. FDR was sending members of his brain trust to Italy to study Italian fascism, to bring those ideas over here. Young JFK went to Nazi Germany and came back effusive with praise of Hitler. Now, after World War II, the progressives look at all this and they go, oh, whoa, we don't want young people to be reading this stuff. Let's kind of prudently leave it out of the textbooks, and so they did. So the interesting thing here is that all these facts I'm just telling you, these are the indisputable facts of history. No one is able to shake a single one of them. But what they do is they dodge, they twist, they camouflage. Because progressives are dominant in academia and the media and Hollywood, they're able to put out this disinformation or propaganda, and no one has a big enough voice to say differently. That's the power of this movie and book. Is it runs against this whole prevailing narrative, and it's able to show that the emperor has no clothes.
Are you seeing eyes opened? Are people coming around? It's one thing to preach to the choir and to get those who already believe these things stirred up. Is your work having an effect? It's documented. So on the one hand, the book, people can dig deep. They can check out the sources. The movie is going to hit with the power of a movie. Are people's eyes actually being opened?
I think so. Look, the book is number two on the New York Times bestseller list. Over 1 million people have seen the movie, and a lot more will see it before we're done. I'd like to have more Democrats, more independents. I think if blacks and Latinos saw this movie, they'd be totally blown away. I'm actually hoping that Trump sees the movie and the RNC. Why? Because they have the ability to actually deliver a DVD of this movie before the election to swing voters. in swing states. I don't have that ability, but they do. And I think I'd love to see the impact of that, just because I think that this would be an eye-opener. It's a discombobulator. It runs against so much of what people have been taught. That we had actors in the movie who were just professional actors. They signed up to play roles as slaves and so on. And when they saw the movie, they'd come running up to me and shake me, and they go, is that true? Is what you say really true? Can you back that up? And the truth of it is I can back all of it up, and I do back all of it up. And so it causes people to change minds when they realize that they've been sold a bill of goods.
Mm. And look, what is also undeniable is that post-civil rights, things are worse in so many ways for Black Americans than before the rise of the civil rights movement. How did that happen? In so many ways, the breakdown of the family in the inner city, how did that happen? And what is behind that? We've just got 2 minutes, but you make the claim, with Hillary in the White House, America will fulfill the dream the Democratic Party has had from the beginning, a dream of stealing America for the politically favored few. Mitt Romney made the infamous comment about 47% of Americans and that they are dependent on the government and et cetera. But when you speak of stealing America for the politically favored few, what's the end game here in your view?
Well, if you look at the end game for the Clintons, a good way to think about it is, what is the goal that someone like Al Capone, a gangster like Capone, what did he actually want to do in Chicago? And the answer is he wanted to basically run the town as if he owned it. He wanted to have access to loot the city treasury. He wanted to be able to give city contracts to all his buddies. He wanted there to be two sets of rules, one for him and one for everybody else. He wanted his critics to be pushed to the side or thrown off a roof. And he wanted, when he walked into the big Chicago stadium, he wanted the whole crowd to stand and shout with cult-like intensity, Big Al, Big Al, Big Al. Well, that's basically what Hillary wants for America. She wants to be sort of the female mob boss of America. She wants to be able to loot the treasury, hand out contracts to her buddies. And she wants to basically have the whole country beholden to her, dependent on her, and her critics to be run out of town. So this is their objective. This is how they've done business. This is how we can expect they will do business. Now, to me, the interesting thing is in the past, we've had crooks in American politics, but we didn't know they were crooks beforehand. We found out, we then threw them out. With Hillary, we know. The Hillary door is marked a known crook. So it's going to be, to me, very fascinating to see whether Americans knowingly go through that door.
Mm. All right, friends, the movie Hillary's America, the book Hillary's America. I want to encourage every one of you who's heard what Dinesh D'Souza had to say today, and your eyebrows are raised, and you're scratching your head, and you don't believe it, or you think he's just being biased, or he's a tool of the Republican Party, or whatever. I encourage you in particular to see the movie. All right, you can go to hillarysamericathemovie.com to find out where it's showing or how you can view it. If you want to dig deeper, get the book Hillary's America. Face the facts. If what he's saying is true, it needs to have an impact on you. So look into it, especially if you differ with what he has to say. Dinesh, I know you're busy. I appreciate you being with us on the Line of Fire, and I hope that truth will get out widely.
Me too. Thank you. It's been my pleasure.
All right. All right, friends. Again, as I said at the outset, my identification is not Republican or Democrat. My identification is Kingdom of God. And I have been disturbed the more I've looked at things, the more I've looked at the welfare system, the more I've looked at things that came about in the aftermath of civil rights, whatever the intent was, all right, various other things that have been set in place over the years. Somehow, there's something in our country consistently trying to keep Black Americans down. And it is not primarily just some racism of, well, we don't like the color of your skin kind of thing. I'm sure that still exists, just like there's Black racism towards whites. But there are larger issues going on, and I say we need to address them honestly and let the chips fall where they may. Does that make sense? Is that acceptable? All right, friends, remember, if you want to get ammunition to deal with common objections raised by atheists, challenges to the scriptures as well, download the movie today, The Atheist Delusion, 60 Minutes. It's at our website, AskDrBrown.org. And remember, 50% of the proceeds are being donated back to our ministry by Ray Cummings.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Nigel Barber, an Irish biopsychologist, predicts that by 2041, atheism will replace religion as the dominant belief, or lack thereof, in the world.
What do you think of those claims? Atheism will replace religion as the dominant belief, or lack thereof, in the coming years? Not a chance. Not a chance. In fact, while you do see atheism rising in America on a certain level, and in some other countries around the world, what is rising is religious faith, both a true faith and what we would say is a deceived faith, but rising around the world. This is Michael Brown. All right, I want to tie a few things together here. I didn't think of this when we scheduled Dinesh to be on the air with us. Dinesh D'Souza, author of Hillary's America and the filmmaker behind Hillary's America. I didn't realize that this would be working together, but this week we are featuring The Atheist Delusion, Ray Comfort's new movie, which you can download on our website, AskDrBrown.org. But I mentioned when I first started talking to Dinesh, 20-something minutes ago when he was on the air with us, that what he and I had in common is that we both debated Professor Bart Ehrman. Professor Bart Ehrman, a respected New Testament scholar, especially a textual scholar, but respected New Testament scholar, and better known as an agnostic, a very zealous agnostic, originally an evangelical, went to Moody Bible Institute, went to Wheaton College, studied at Princeton University under Bruce Metzger, who was the top New Testament textual scholar of his generation here in the States, and also a believer in Jesus. But Bart Ehrman, as he tells his own story, began to question some of his evangelical beliefs as he was in grad school. This happens with many. I was challenged in my beliefs as well, but came to different conclusions than Professor Ehrman did. And over a period of time, he then shifted to a more liberal form of Christianity, but still considered himself a Christian, and then confronting the problem of suffering, and as I understand it, the loss of his father to cancer, he then ultimately questioned the existence of God and has become a zealous agnostic. And a few years ago at Ohio State University, he and I debated, does the Bible provide an adequate answer to the problem of suffering? He had written the book God's Problem, and this was our debate on the subject, does the Bible provide an adequate answer to the problem of suffering? So Dinesh also debated Bart Ehrman on that same subject. And I didn't watch all of their debate, but I did watch some of it before my debate with Professor Ehrman. And I watched the end of it. And at the end, for Professor Ehrman's closing remarks, what he basically did was took the last chapter of his book. He took the last chapter of his book, God's Problem, and used that as his closing remarks. So I just thought, I think he's going to do that. And I was ready, if he did, that my closing remarks would be a direct interaction with his closing remarks. Because when you get to the end, for me, I have very few closing remarks prepared, maybe a couple things I want to say, but you're not bringing up new arguments then. You are pretty much summing up what you believe you've accomplished in the debate and pushing back against other points that your opponent has made. So it worked out really well. You can watch that debate on our website, AskDrBrown, askdrbrown.org. Just type in Ehrman, E-H-R-M-A-N, and you can watch that, and you'll be edified by it. But what's so clear, though, was that when you take God out of the picture, there is no ultimate answer to the problem of suffering, except for eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we die, which is hardly an answer at all, and hardly helps those in the midst of terrible suffering around the world. So I think you'll find the debate edifying, but brings me full circle back to the question of God. And ultimately, the greatest need in America today is for the church to be the church. With that, as we live out what God has called us to live out and pray, God will move, God will act. And if God consciousness, please hear me, if God consciousness could be restored to the nation, everything would change.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
So I'm going to do everything I can to draw the contrasts with the Republicans who are currently meeting up in Cleveland. And I think it's fair to say we're going to hear a lot about taking our country backwards, because that's really what they mean when they talk about making us great again.
All right, that's Hillary Clinton speaking at a rally in Cincinnati. This is Michael Brown. Again, my issue with Hillary Clinton is not Democrat versus Republican, although Janice D'Souza has raised some very, very serious claims about the ultimate goals of the Democratic Party, and you'll have to sort those out for yourself. My trust is not in the Republican Party. My trust is not in Donald Trump. I would like to be able to vote for Donald Trump, meaning I cannot vote for Hillary Clinton. And if I believe that Donald Trump could be a positive agent of change, or at least push us in the right direction in certain ways, or simply govern better than Hillary Clinton, then I would vote for him. Again, to me, the jury's still out on that. I'm glad that godly leaders are speaking into his life. I know that they are. I know it firsthand that they are. And I believe what's being shared with him is important counsel, biblically based wisdom, and important counsel in terms of issues that matter and in terms of character. And perhaps he'll take heed, or perhaps God will use him in the midst of blindness or ignorance. Let God be God. But my issues have to do with issues of life and death. My issues are ultimately based on what it means for us as followers of Jesus to be in this world and how we are to live. And on my checklist of things to do, on my checklist of important things to do to change America, voting for president is on that list, but it's way down, to be honest. It's important, but it's way down. It's much, much more important for the church to be the church, meaning for us to love God with all our heart, soul, mind, and strength, and to love our neighbors ourselves, meaning to shine like lights in a darkened world, meaning to be the salt of the earth, meaning to demonstrate who Jesus is to a lost world, meaning to demonstrate the reality of his death and resurrection to a lost world, meaning to live in such a way that people become conscious of God. Look, if we are the light, you flip a light switch on in a dark room, and depending on the strength of that light and the size of that room, one light can light up the whole room, or a few lights can light up the whole room. And I dropped something on the floor the other day. It was small, and the room was dimly lit. I couldn't find it. The moment I flipped the light on, I could find it easily. Light exposes the darkness. If someone was breaking in the middle of the night, there's a reason they're breaking in the middle of the night, because they think no one can see me. And when suddenly the lights are turned on, they trip a switch and an alarm goes off and the lights go on, they run. The light exposes the darkness. And the light also brings hope and brings healing and brings life into dark and dying places. So ultimately, my issues are life and death issues. My issues are ultimately the church being the church, God's people praying, God's people living for God, God's people living holy lives, God's people winning the lost. If we were to do those things, we would see substantial change come to our nation. And because political leaders play a role, for better or worse, our voting matters. But it's not the top priority. We often get caught up as if it's the top priority. It's not the top priority. But again, I want you to understand what most deeply concerns me. Let's grab clip number 8. These are some quotes by Democratic candidate Hillary Clinton about abortion. And now notice, this is not conservative talk radio. I want to remind you about that. How often do you hear me mention by name President Obama to bash him for this or to bash him for that? Or I should say to differ, I'm still going to do it respectfully, he's our president, to differ with him on this and that and the latest issue I have. Very rarely. You haven't heard me attack, well, he's played 300 rounds of golf. No. That's not who I am. That's not what I'm going to do on the radio. And that's not why you're listening. I know your hearts as well. That's not why you're listening. That's not why I'm on the air. You don't hear me every day with the latest attack on Hillary Clinton. I am raising my voice now because of life and death concerns for those that do plan to vote for her and you claim to be a follower of Jesus. I'm not saying you're not. I'm saying that's your claim, just like I make that claim, that I want you to consider it and reconsider it because of the fact that a vote for her is a radical pro-abortion vote. So listen to some of what she's had to say over the months. Clip number 8.
I'm obviously not only against defunding Planned Parenthood, but I would like to see Planned Parenthood even get more funding.
Deep-seated cultural codes, religious beliefs, and structural biases have to be changed.
The unborn person doesn't have constitutional rights.
The only people that I would ever appoint to the Supreme Court are people who believe that Roe v. Wade is settled law and Citizens United needs to be overturned.
All right. I'm going to replay that in a moment. We're talking about life and death issues. We're talking about the church being the church. If you lived in the days of slavery and there was a candidate that you believed was a good candidate in terms of the economy and a good candidate in terms of national security, but was a slave owner who was also a militant pro-slavery candidate, and they were absolutely in bed with the slave trade, and in every way they wanted to bring in more slaves and deepen the bondage of slaves in America. If that candidate was also good on the economy in other ways and good for national security, could you, as a Christian, vote for that candidate? I couldn't. What if there was an abolition candidate who stood for the freeing of the slaves, who stood for equality of the races, who stood against the slave trade, was not as strong on the economy, was not as strong on national security, but stood fervently as an abolitionist and really had a chance of changing American views on that? Would you vote for that person? I would. Now, obviously, the goal is someone that's strong on all areas, but there are life and death issues. And when you study scripture, you'll find that. You'll find there are a few issues over and over and over again that God keeps coming back to. Idolatry is a major one. Idolatry. With that, injustice. With that, immorality. You find these three I's all the time in the Old Testament. Idolatry, immorality, injustice. In fact, you find them going hand in hand. And in fact, in many of the idolatrous shrines, immorality was practiced as well. So-called sacred prostitutes, both heterosexual and homosexual. But on a fundamental level, when you see something that gets a particular focus from the prophets, something that rises to the level of God saying, I will not forgive this. It has gone too far. I will not forgive this. You're generally finding something like the shedding of innocent blood, and in particular, the shedding of the blood of babies and children as they were sacrificed to Molech, as they were sacrificed on these idol statues where the child would be placed on the hands of this metal statue that would then be heated up so it would be absolutely burning when they put the child on there, the helpless child, to be burned to death. And then the priests playing on their tambourines or their drums and people shouting and chanting to muffle out the cries of the baby. God said, I will not forgive that. I'm going to destroy Jerusalem because of that. I'm going to judge my people because of that. So I just want you to do this. If you are a follower of Jesus and you plan to vote for a strong pro-abortion candidate, not every Democrat is strongly pro-abortion. Their platform is radically so. But not every Democrat is strongly pro-abortion. Hillary Clinton is. Hillary Clinton is a longtime militant pro-abortion candidate with extreme views. I want you to just take a minute and just get online and type in abortion photos. And look at those pictures. Look at those pictures. And then listen again, clip 8. Listen to what Hillary Clinton has to say, and you tell me if you can vote for her. Go ahead.
I'm obviously not only against defunding Planned Parenthood, but I would like to see Planned Parenthood even get more funding.
Deep-seated cultural codes, religious beliefs, and structural biases have to be changed.
The unborn person doesn't have constitutional rights.
The only people that I would ever appoint to the Supreme Court are people who believe that Roe v. Wade is settled law and Citizens United needs to be overturned.
Yeah, and did you hear it? Your deep-seated religious beliefs about this are going to have to change. How can you possibly vote for someone that is saying that out loud, overtly? Your deeply held religious beliefs on these issues are going to have to change. How can you be complicit in voting for someone like that?
The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Are you an atheist?
I am.
So you're an atheist?
Yes.
I need to know what to believe in.
Like what happens when you die?
Yes, I don't want to be a bag of dust.
I think I am open to evidence. It just would have to be extraordinarily compelling, like out of this world compelling.
From the movie The Atheist Delusion. I'll tell you more about that in a moment. This is Michael Brown. Welcome back to The Line of Fire. All right, I want to bring all these things together, social issues, moral issues, voting, the church being the church, the real solution to America's deepest problems. A few years back, my dear friend Rabbi Shmuley Boteach and I had done a debate in the city of Charlotte, North Carolina. It was the culmination of a major apologetics conference. It was a Saturday night debate, which meant that Shmuley had to fly in earlier on Friday, and then we got him a hotel room and then got him kosher food that he would need while he was there. And because it's a Sabbath, he wouldn't shop, he wouldn't buy or sell, do anything like that, wouldn't be using electronic devices, you know, wouldn't be using computer or phone or anything like that. And then after the Sabbath, picked him up, and we did this debate together and then hung out some afterwards. And after the debate, he said, and it was about Jesus being the Messiah, he said, listen, I'd like to do another debate with you. We had done a shorter one for our students one time at Fire School of Ministry. He said, I'd like to do another debate with you. I'd like to come back and bring my wife and take her around the area of North Carolina. He said, I'd like to do another debate with you and let the topic be, is homosexuality America's greatest moral crisis? I said, well, I'm glad to debate that issue with you. I would rather not use that title for it, but I'm glad to debate it. And he said, well, let's use that title. I said, okay, fine. I'm not going to agree to that premise. I'm not going to say that homosexuality is America's greatest moral crisis, but sure, I'll gladly debate it, because Shmuley's view was that evangelical Christians put way too much emphasis on the issue of homosexuality and make it into the bogeyman as if that's the cause of all the problems in America. And my issue was, it's not the act that we're talking about. It's not the physical act we're talking about or what people do in private. Of course, that's wrong, sinful in God's sight. But we're talking about the activism, not the act as much as the activism. That's what is of great concern to us in America. You can order that debate on our website, AskDrBrown.org. Just type in Shmuley, S-H-M-U-L-E-Y, and you'll be able to find that in our online store. But all that to say this, when I talked to Nancy before the debate, she said, do you agree that homosexuality is America's greatest moral crisis? I said, no. She said, neither do I. Now, I have said that gay activism is the greatest threat to freedom of religion, speech, and conscience in America. I've said that, and I stand by that. And you don't have to be a rocket scientist to understand why I say that. If you followed my ministry for any years, you know that we've documented that, and others have for some time. But Nancy and I agreed, we both agreed without hesitation, that the greatest moral crisis in America today is the lack of consciousness of God. That the greatest moral crisis in America today is the lack of consciousness of God. And that's what I come back to. If we had a greater God consciousness, we would not be slaughtering a million babies a year in the womb. If we had a greater God consciousness, we would not have rampant no-fault divorce in the church. If we had a greater God consciousness, we would not have many of the breakdowns that we have in our society, because there would be more awareness of God and more fear of God and more reverence of God and more love for God, which would then translate into love for our neighbor, which would then translate into compassionate care for our neighbor in need, which would then translate into justice for the oppressed. It would bring about massive societal change, a greater consciousness of God, which is what I come back to ultimately, that we must have that beginning in the church for America to be impacted. For the church to be the church as Jesus intended, the church must have a greater consciousness of God. And the movie, The Atheist Delusion, will help in that very area, help bring a consciousness of God to the believer and to the non-believer. So download it today on our website, Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org. If you enjoy it, tell a friend to download it this week. And 50% of the proceeds that come in through the sale of this movie on our website are being donated back to us by Ray Comfort's ministry. So be a blessing to us and be a blessing to yourself and your friends and loved ones in the process. All right, I've not taken a call this entire hour. I'm going to try to grab one quick one. We'll go to Boston. Carlos, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Thank you so much, Dr. Michael Brown.
You're very welcome.
Okay. I'm going to vote in Hillary Clinton next election. And I'm a pastor. And I believe I'm a Christian. I believe I'm anti-abortion. And all the issues, I'm in the right way. But my question is, I am a pastor of an immigrant church, people from South America. You understand?
Mm-hmm.
And Mr. Trump, he tells for everyone to listen, he's going to kick off like 15 million people.
He's actually not saying he's not saying that though. That's right. He's actually not saying that.
I'm sorry, he said that.
Right. If you listen to what he's actually putting forth as policy, he's not saying that there's going to be massive deportation. But here's the issue though, Carlos.
Okay, if he doesn't send all them back, maybe just like 5 million or 10 million or whatever number. My point is, if it's about life and death, we're going to have a lot of kids, real people. They're going to die for starvation because the parents...
Carlos, that's nonsense. With all respect, sir, with all respect to you as a pastor, you're believing political talking points. Hillary Clinton is telling you, as a pastor, that you are going to have to change your views on abortion. I'm not a Donald Trump supporter, okay? But Hillary Clinton is telling you that you are going to have to change your views on abortion. And, sir, with her in power, you could well have your religious liberties restricted on a very, very fundamental level where you are not able to do what you do with complete freedom. That is not far-fetched. I believe you are listening to political talking points by the opponents of Donald Trump. And as a pastor and as an educated man, you know that you have to research for yourself. So do this. Look at the official statement on the Republican National Party platform, okay? Look at their actual platform statement about immigration and sort that out. But do not vote for a candidate that wants to shed blood in the womb. Do not. That's my exhortation to you. Thank you, sir. Wish we had more time to talk. My bottom line today, God's a God of life. Don't stand for those who want to take it in the womb. Friends, if we are going to see America impacted, the church must get back to the basics, back to prayer, back to winning the lost.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
I heard that it was the best movie Living Waters ever created. And I'm thinking to myself, how can that be? Their movies are so great. How can any movie be better than the last? And then I'm watching it. And as it's going along, it's like, wow, it is the best movie ever. I left that movie with goosebumps, crying, and I'm so excited to see it come out, and it's going to change many lives. I know it will.
Wow, those are powerful words. This is in reference to the new movie, The Atheist Delusion, that Ray Comfort has put out. If you listened yesterday, you heard Ray on with me for almost an entire hour talking about the movie, talking about objections, talking about atheism. And I know Ray is loved by many and hated by many. My issue is, let's get the movie out. Let's have people look at it and discuss it. And let's see if it's as powerful as it claims to be, because it's having an impact. It's having an impact on people. This is Michael Brown. Welcome to The Line of Fire. Last hour, I spoke with Dinesh D'Souza, best-selling author, filmmaker, about Hillary's America, about what he claims is the secret agenda of the Democratic Party. And we encourage you to look into these things, these claims that he says are very well documented, things that have concerned me for some time. But I'm not here as a Democrat. I'm not here as a Republican. I'm here as a follower of Jesus. I'm not here as a conservative talk radio host. I'm here as a follower of Jesus. I've been preaching since 1973. I'm first and foremost a minister of the gospel or servant of the Lord that expresses itself in many different ways, that calling to be of God's service, that expresses itself as a radio host, it expresses itself as a columnist, it expresses itself as an author of books, it expresses itself as a student of Scripture and a professor, it expresses itself as someone who preaches and teaches around America, around the world. It expresses itself in private as I get on my knees, as you do, and pray. Ultimately, in the midst of another volatile political campaign, and one that may end up being one of the most volatile political campaigns in memory, if not the most volatile, the greatest issue is not who gets into the White House. That is important. That is important. But it is not the greatest issue. The greatest issue is the church in America coming alive. The greatest issue is the people of God recovering the power of prayer. The people of God recovering the importance of evangelism. The people of God recovering an understanding of being disciples and making disciples. So here, you're in a dark cave. All right, you're on some exploratory journey, some camping expedition, and you discover this really interesting cave, but it's really dark in there. So what do you do? What do you do? You turn on a flashlight. Does anybody have a flashlight? You turn on the light. Why? Because that is the need. In darkness, you need light. So that's my great, great contention. We must, as the children of God, shine as lights. We must recover our calling in Jesus. We must give ourselves to prayer. We must give ourselves to living by the word. We must give ourselves to impacting the world through the gospel. And based on that, change can come. We'll be right back.
Hey friends, this is Michael Brown.
I want to encourage you to join our support team today. Become a torchbearer, one of our regular monthly supporters that enables us to broadcast the Line of Fire around America and around the world. And oh, every month we sow back into you in many, many different ways. Join our team. Become a torchbearer. Go to Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org, and click on Donate.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks so much for joining us on the Line of Fire. This is Michael Brown. Yes, your voice of moral sanity and spiritual clarity in the midst of a society in chaos and a church all too often in compromise. You just heard an ad as we encourage you to join our support team, become a monthly torchbearer. During the show today, as I've had some time during breaks, I have been signing some letters, and these are thank you letters that I personally sign and add a note to folks who have sent in funds to support our ministry. And sometimes there's a stack of letters like that to send in of folks who've given special gifts. So from the heart, thank you for being part of our support team. Thank you for standing with us and helping us to make a difference. Just looking at this note from, goes back to August 19th, 2013. I just spotted it. I've only been able to give up listening to Rush Limbaugh by finding lineoffireradio.com. Michael Brown, glad you're back. Even my 12-year-old asked before going to sleep, can we listen to Dr. Brown? When you go on vacation, it would be interesting if you had a chosen guest radio host. Actually, I don't normally go on vacation, not because I'm crazy about it and just haven't had a need to. And Nancy hasn't had a need for us to go away on vacation. We do sometimes, so we can get away with the whole family, the kids and grandkids. And that's awesome. That's a blast. And then we'll have a special guest host or we'll prepare some shows in advance. But to be honest, this year, we don't have any vacation scheduled, but I'm great. I'm absolutely great with it. We're good. We are thriving. There's no problem. There's no issue. Rush Limbaugh referenced himself one day as being on the cutting edge of societal evolution. So I said, well, I'm on the cutting edge of Jesus revolution. He's on the cutting edge of societal evolution. I'm on the cutting edge of Jesus revolution and inviting you to join me, to be part of that Jesus revolution, which means what? Jesus radically changing us, and we go and radically change the world, okay? Jesus radically changes us, and we go and radically change the world. What does it start with? Where does Change for America start? Does it change at the ballot box? Oh, that's an important part, but no, that's not where it starts. Does it start with the media? Oh, the media is massively important and influential. No, that's not where it starts. Does it start in the education system, in our children's schools and universities? Well, how much more influential are you going to be than that? But no, that's not where it starts. Does it start in the world of sports, the world of entertainment? I mean, that's so seductive and it takes so much of our time and energy over the course of a year, course of a lifetime, or greatly influential. Well, no, that's not where change starts. Change starts with the people of God getting rightly connected to God. Change starts with the people of God being changed, and as we are changed, the world is changed around us. Now, I'm writing a book I'll tell you more about in the months ahead, because it won't be out until probably the middle of next year. But it's how America can be changed and in a positive way rebuilt based on biblical wisdom and biblical truth, based on going back to God's ways, going back to Scripture. Now, it's not calling for theocracy where priestly rulers lead the nation and force the whole nation to follow God and the Bible. No, of course not. Every earthly theocracy will fail. When Jesus returns and sets up his kingdom, that will succeed. But when we try to set it up and do it, no, that's a guaranteed failure. guaranteed. I'm not advocating for theonomy, where we take the Bible and say everything that was taught in the Bible that was law for Israel is now law for America. For many reasons, I'm not advocating that, although absolutely, I believe that biblical principles should be at the foundation of our laws as they were through our history. But rather, what I'm saying is, as we, God's people, follow God's directives, we as God's people start to live like God's people. Remember, as I've said many times, and my dear friends, David and Jason Benham have reiterated in many an interview since, my greatest issue, my greatest concern is not so much the presence of darkness in America. My greatest issue, greatest concern is the absence of light. Okay? Let me repeat that. And again, you may have heard others quote it, but it's something that I've said for years that others have heard and repeated, and I'm glad they have. My greatest concern is not so much the presence of darkness in America, it is the absence of light. Oh, yeah, there's some real trash that's put out by Hollywood that glorifies violence, that glorifies immorality, that bashes biblical beliefs. There's some great stuff put out by Hollywood, but some real trash. And that real trash has a negative impact. Some of it is overt, some of it is covert. There are things that are done in our school systems that greatly concern me. And right now, in Charlotte-Mecklenburg schools, they are delaying the implementation of their radical transgender bathroom, transgender classroom, transgender vocabulary guidelines. Those are being delayed, and for good reason. There is an uproar against them, and it's one thing to try to accommodate a student in need or a student who is confused or a student who's struggling. It's another thing to turn everything upside down on their behalf. Read my latest articles, watch my latest videos on that. Just go to Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org, to find out more. You'll be able to read articles, watch videos that are completely relevant to this subject. Compassion for all individuals, yes. Turn society upside down on their behalf, no. Again, my analogy, you've heard it 100 times already. If you have a blind student in your school, you don't require all students to close their eyes and read with Braille. Instead, you do your best to help that one struggling student. You accommodate them without burdening everybody else in an undue, unnecessary way. But all that to say this. For me, everything comes back to the church being the church. Yes, we should impact the educational system. Yes, we should impact politics. Yes, we should impact the media. Yes, we should impact the sports and entertainment world. Yes, we should impact every area of culture, the business world, everything. Why? Because if we're shining as lights, it'll make a difference. It will raise moral levels. It will raise ethical levels. It will strengthen families. It will strengthen the economy. These will just be natural results of God's people living as God's people. But I want to quote something that Charles Finney said, and I address it in my book that'll be coming out next year in terms of America's recovery. December 4th, 1873, Charles Finney made this comment. Brethren, our preaching will bear its legitimate fruits. If immorality prevails in the land, the fault is ours in a great degree. All right, he's speaking to preachers, to pastors, to Christian leaders. If there is a decay of conscience, the pulpit is responsible for it. If the public press lacks moral discrimination, the pulpit is responsible for it. If the church is degenerate and worldly, the pulpit is responsible for it. If the world loses its interest in religion, the pulpit is responsible for it. If Satan rules in our halls of legislation, the pulpit is responsible for it. If our politics become so corrupt that the very foundations of our government are ready to fall away, the pulpit is responsible for it. Let us not ignore this fact, my dear brethren, but let us lay it to heart and be thoroughly awake to our responsibility in respect to the morals of this nation. Now, on the one hand, in Finney's day, the pulpit did play a greater role in society. There was a greater reverence for Scripture and respect for the church at that time. So in that sense, his statement needs to be modified. But it should not be thrown out, as I've emphasized before. Why? Well, the great majority of people in the USA still claim to be Christian. Our airwaves are flooded with 24/7 gospel radio and TV. We have New York Times best-selling Christian books. Roughly one-third of Americans attend church on a regular basis. So the answer remains yes. The pulpit is largely responsible. So what am I saying? America is in bad shape because much of the church is in bad shape. Much of the church is in bad shape because much of the leadership is in bad shape. As the leaders get rightly reconnected to God and preach a biblical message as opposed to a self-help motivational message, the church will be strengthened. As the church is strengthened, America will be strengthened. Pretty simple, no? We'll be right back.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
If you've read Proverbs, read Job, you've seen the verses that tell us that the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, the beginning of knowledge. The fear of the Lord, the beginning of wisdom, the beginning of knowledge. What does that mean? Recognizing who he is, having a reverential appreciation for who he is. That's the beginning of wisdom and knowledge. When you reject that, then all of your other foundations are faulty. When you reject the reverence of the Lord, recognizing who he is, recognizing his justice, recognizing his goodness, his purity, his truth, when you reject that, recognizing him as the ultimate judge to whom we're accountable, whatever wisdom or knowledge you have in terms of eternal issues, in terms of ultimate morality, in terms of what's best for a nation, those aspects of your wisdom and knowledge will be fundamentally flawed. Now, you could reject the notion of God and still be a good car mechanic. You could reject the notion of God and still be a good mathematician. You reject the notion of God and still be a good surgeon. But in terms of ultimate wisdom and ultimate knowledge, the rejection of God is the rejection of wisdom and knowledge. This is Michael Brown. You are listening to The Line of Fire. In the midst of the political elections, in the midst of the moral and social questions we face in America, my duty, my role, is to keep pushing us back to the God of the Bible and calling the church to be the church and to follow in the footsteps of Jesus. And that means compassionate care for the poor and the needy. That means standing for social justice. That means having holistic policies concerning immigration, holistic policies concerning the preservation of life in the womb and outside of the womb. It means many different things. And it does mean that we are wise in terms of our national security. And it does mean that we are frugal and good stewards in terms of our national economy. It means also that our marriages are solid and that we take childbearing and child-rearing seriously. These are things that all flow out of the fear of God. But let's come back to this on a fundamental level, this concept of the fear of the Lord. The first time you find it referenced is in Genesis, the 20th chapter, where Abraham goes with Sarah to Gerar, to the kingdom of Abimelech. And while there, he says about Sarah, his wife, even though she's an older woman, he says that she is his sister. She was a half-sister. Says that she was his sister, not his wife. Why? Because he said to himself, there's no fear of God here. There's no fear of God. When Abimelech says to Abraham, what have you done? Why did you do this? Abraham says, because I thought there's no fear of God at all in this place, and they'll kill me because of my wife. And he said, because she indeed is my sister, the daughter of my father, though not the daughter of my mother, and she became my wife. These exceptional things in terms of these close relations and intermarriage were things that existed in the early times of the world's history or in the early beginnings of the chosen race and thereafter became forbidden. But what's important to understand here is that Abraham said to himself, there's no fear of God here. If there was fear of God, and they think, hey, that guy's got a beautiful wife, and exactly where this happens chronologically can be debated. There's a saying in some rabbinic commentaries, Ein mukdam u'meuchar, there is no earlier or later in the Torah, meaning just because a certain account occurs at a certain place doesn't mean it's there chronologically. In any case, what we know is that Sarah was still a beautiful woman. And Abraham thinks, they see me with this beautiful woman, they realize that's my wife, they're going to kill me and take her, right? Because they know they can't have me, have her if she's married to me, so they'll kill me because there's no fear of God in this place. If they feared God, they'd never do such a thing. But it turns out that Abimelech did have certain integrity, and because of that, God did not touch him. God did not destroy him, all right? He said, in the integrity of my heart, in the innocence of my hands, I've done this. And God said, yes, I know that you've done this in the integrity of your heart, and it was I who kept you from sinning against me. Therefore, I did not let you touch her, because I saw that you had integrity of heart, and you wanted to do the right thing. So I stopped you from being with her. Otherwise, you would have committed adultery. And of course, God stopped the wombs of the women and or made the men impotent. So no one was able to conceive during this time, and that was part of the wake-up call. And then when Abraham prays, God heals them, God restores them. But that's the first time the fear of God is mentioned. The second time is in Exodus, the 20th chapter. And the people are terrified. The people are absolutely terrified, the children of Israel, as they hear God speak from Mount Sinai, the whole mountain shaking and quaking, and they're petrified. And Moses says, don't fear, because God has put his fear before you that you won't sin. Now, some translations say, don't be afraid. God has put his fear before you, because it seems contradictory to say, don't fear, but here's why his fear is here. But it's actually the same Hebrew word that's used. So I think it's best to translate with don't fear. God has put his fear in front of you so that you won't sin. In other words, saying, don't be terrified that he's going to kill you. However, be terrified that if you play with sin, you're going to die. That those, in that sense, electric wires are very dangerous. They can kill you. But as long as you stay away from them, they're protective. They're fine. God is here to bless you, not curse you. God is here to do good to you, not to hurt you. God is here to prolong your life as you serve him and honor him, not to destroy your life. However, if you don't reverence him, if you don't recognize his holiness, and you're going to violate his ways and flaunt his commandments and freely disobey, then you're going to suffer the consequences. So don't be terrified, but have a godly reverence. Again, using the same Hebrew word in both cases. Now, is this some antiquated concept? There is a book, Why Atheism Will Replace Religion, The Triumph of Earthly Pleasures Over Pie in the Sky by Nigel Baker, came out back in 2012. Listen to this comment, clip number 15.
His assertions are based on a study he recently conducted involving 137 countries. The author has said, atheists are more likely to be college-educated people who live in cities, and they are highly concentrated in the social democracies of Europe. Atheism thus blossoms amid influence where people feel economically secure. Religiosity is highest in impoverished areas, facing many disasters with low educational opportunities. As areas of the world become more stable, they will abandon their traditional beliefs.
Ah, is that true? The better educated people are, the more established they are economically, the less they believe in God. That may happen in certain circles, but the reason it would happen is not because beliefs in God are mythical, because people often get more settled in their ways and forget him as if they don't need him. And many times when we are more needy, we recognize our need for him. The fact is, we all need him. The fact is, you don't need a crutch. You need to be resurrected from the dead. You need a crutch. You need an ambulance and life support. You need a crutch. You need deliverance from death and hell. So sometimes we become comfy, cozy, but you watch where this goes. Ultimately, it does not lead to life. It leads to forms of death in other ways. We return to who God is. We walk before him in a way that pleases him. As a result, we will see the blessing of God individually and nationally. Back to us, back to you and me, and God.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
This is, bar none, the most compelling and comprehensive piece of its kind. I've never seen anything so comprehensive. Somehow you managed, in less than an hour, to make the case beyond any reasonable doubt for the Creator God. This is your masterpiece.
Ah, Matt Barber. Matt Barber, conservative columnist and author, lawyer. Matt Barber. Speaking about Ray Comfort's new movie, The Atheist Delusion. Remember, when you download it from our website this week, not only will you get a first-class, eye-opening 60-minute movie that will respond to many common objections to the faith and attacks on Scripture and attacks on a belief in God, but will actually show you people whose views are changing. Their views actually change from atheism to being willing to follow the truth about God. You'll see it in front of your eyes on this powerful video, just based on one fundamental question that Ray is going to raise. But with every purchase on our website this week, 50% of that purchase price goes right back into our ministry as a gift from Ray Comfort's ministry. So take advantage of that. Be a blessing to us and be blessed yourselves. Tell your friends, too. Encourage them to do this. Go to Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org, and download the video today, The Atheist Delusion. My very simple thesis today is this, that the greatest need in America today is for the church to be the church as Jesus intended it to be. Politics, very important. Who we vote for as president, other elected officials, very important. Issues of national security, very important. A massive host of important issues that we are facing. And all of you might have your list of top five or top 10 issues that you think are critically important. And for some, you're saying it all comes back to the family. Others are saying it's the educational system. Others are saying it's the media. Others are saying it's national security. Others are saying it's abortion. Others are saying yet another issue. But ultimately, here's what it boils down to. And I'll say this yet again, because I know we need to get these things drilled into us. We need to get these things drilled deep into our consciousness. Bottom line, the problem is not that the darkness is dark. That's what darkness does. Okay? Darkness is dark by nature and definition. Sinners sin by nature and definition. Darkness is dark by nature and definition. If you have a flood in your home, the water is just being water. The question is how to get the water out and stop the water from coming in. So how do we deal with darkness? By shining like lights, by turning the light on, by getting our own light in order. Maybe the bulb needs to be replaced. Maybe the bulb is not the proper wattage. Maybe you're out of candlesticks. Maybe the oil in the oil lamps run down. Whatever culture you're in, maybe the flashlight needs new batteries. I just ordered a little desk lamp to go next to a computer. I switched rooms at home recently, and there's just not enough light to read books properly as I'm doing my research and writing and things like that. So I ordered this little lamp. I just wanted to read about it, how bright it is and how it is on the eyes, etc. And with a little bit more light, I'll be able to see much more clearly. Issues, critical issues, life and death issues in America will become much, much more clear as we shine like lights. Some of us need to dust off the light bulbs. Some of us need to dust off the lamps because they have gotten so covered with dust and grease that the light's not shining clearly. Let us let our light shine that the world may see our good deeds and praise our Father in heaven.
Give us strength to always do what's right. It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Are you an atheist?
Yes, sir.
Are you an atheist?
I'm no longer an atheist.
You're an open-minded atheist?
True. I am no longer an atheist.
Alex, do you believe in God's existence?
No, I do not.
Do you now believe in God's existence?
Yes, I do.
That is from The Atheist Delusion, Ray Comfort's movie. You can download it on our website, askdrbrown.org, askdrbrown.org. Just a reminder, when you download it from our website, 50% of all of the funds that come in are being donated back to our ministry by Ray Comfort's ministry. So we appreciate the partnership here. I am joined by my dear friend and colleague, James Robison. And what I've been saying for the better part of the broadcast today is that the key in America is for the church to be the church again. James, you've written a couple of books recently, Indivisible with Jay Richards, a best-selling book, more recently, The Stream. I'm finishing a book now about the fall and rise of America, how America can recover by getting back to the wisdom of the word. This is something very, very central that you've held to for decades. And as much as we're looking at volatile political elections, these are important, but there's something bigger, isn't there, for America to be strong, healthy, more important than political elections, the church has to be the church. Do you agree with that?
Absolutely. And we've got to proclaim the truth that transforms. And when it is responded to and received, like the good seed that it is in fertile soil, it brings forth the fruit of the Spirit, which the love, the joy, the peace, and even passes understanding. It's so overwhelmingly great. And the love that flows, it's basically unconditional for one another and for those who are our enemies, although we don't join them in their rebellion or get in bed with them just because we love them and forgive them. And I just think the church has to realize that we are here to make a kingdom imprint on this planet right now. And we don't dismiss ourselves from that God-given assignment and responsibility. We've got to take it seriously.
Have we somehow lost emphasis on our spiritual weapons and spiritual warfare, gotten so caught up with things in this world that we have forgotten the power of prayer, forgotten the fundamental importance of that great secret weapon we have, the power of evangelism? Have we leaned more on other means and forgotten these more fundamental means of changing the world?
Well, perhaps we have. We've settled into being religious, as it's been said oftentimes. We've been going to church rather than being the church. We're here to be witnesses. I signed on as a teenager well over 50 years ago. And I meant it when I signed on. It didn't mean that I would never miss the mark, fall short, or even fall in a ditch, whether I'm thrown in it or dug it and got in it. He will lift me out of it. And I was determined to be committed to his divine assignment as witnesses on this earth. And I think there's something about meaning that. It's like the commitment in marriage. In other words, it means something. This is a serious lifetime commitment with eternal effect and consequences. And I'm serious about it. I think there are many people who join churches like they would join some kind of a local club, civic club, or some kind of a get-together group. But they've not signed on to do what Jesus left us here to do. He didn't leave us here to get ready to escape. He left us here to impact everything in a profound and positive way. And we not only need to pray, but we need to say, God, help us be an answer to prayers. Because we can pray something and know something needs to be done and then sit back and wait for somebody to do it, when if we would just tune our ears to Jesus, he's telling us to go do it. What is burning in our heart is in his heart. Now go put feet to the prayers and do it. Imagine people today thinking that because we've got so much trouble and because we see things that are amiss, rather than praying for God to change the individuals who need to be changed, people are opting out of their own responsibility to try to choose the very best possible avenue of escape. Right now, we've got a candidate on one side that is committed to the principle of death and demanding the right to terminate life and demanding that we learn to depend upon the government for our sustenance and forsake divine providence for the provisional care of Uncle Sam or the father of the federal government, which is ridiculous. And then the other one, the individual is anything but the ideal. But what about praying for God to totally change that individual? And that may be a gradual change, but how about we pray for it? How about we try to make a positive impact, first of all, by loving the individual that has so many reasons we would say he needs some kind of work in his life of divine nature? Why don't we pray for that miracle? And why would people get unhappy, let's say with someone like me, who prays with every candidate that wants to have an opportunity to pray, who shares the principles that I believe are irrefutable, unshakable, and historically proven to be meaningful and effective, and I share that with him. And so then if I share them with the man that everybody seems to think he has such a despicable past, perhaps, or one we don't understand, and yet he's opened the door for me to come in with the power of the gospel throbbing in my heart, the power of God in my body and in my life, and a transformed life and an incredible story of being, the product of a rape, and the doctor refused to abort me. My life rebukes the practices of the day. And this individual is captivated by the miracle of my journey, and he's interested and says he wants to hear. And people will scold me for even talking to him and praying with him. I thought I was left here to be witnesses even to those of Caesar's household. I'm left to be witnesses to people wherever they are on this earth. And that's what all of us are here for. Why would we scold one another and even despise somebody if they simply try to be the witness that God left us here to be and be an answer to prayer? And while we're ministering and witnessing, we're praying continually. We're interceding, knowing that Jesus is interceding for us right now. I don't understand the absolute nonsense of many people who profess to know Christ, and yet they don't want anyone to actually do what he left us here to do without criticizing them if they happen to be sharing the gospel with someone they don't care for. It's puzzling, isn't it?
Yeah, it is puzzling, for sure. It's one thing to get in bed with a party. It's one thing to get in bed with a candidate and sell one's soul to do it. It's another thing to bring the gospel. You're going to criticize Billy Graham for having access to all these presidents. I look at it, I'm stunned. I've never met with a president, and yet he had access to president after president. And what was his counsel? His counsel was ultimately gospel as opposed to partisan politics. So let me play the devil's advocate, James. Do you really ever see anybody change through prayer? It's one thing to talk about prayer, but where's the proof that prayer really makes a difference? Can you say that you've literally seen it where you or friends set your heart on praying for somebody and you've seen that person transformed by the power of prayer? Where's the proof of the results of the power of prayer? That's what critics, skeptics would say. What would you say in response?
Well, when the people gathered in the upper room to pray and they were in one accord and came together, this very diverse group of individuals, the power of the Holy Spirit was poured out them upon them so mightily that a cowardly Simon Peter suddenly becomes the keynote speaker at Pentecost. The result of prayer, and 3,000 were saved that day. They were able to speak the language of the people in the very dialect that they understood what they were saying. In other words, the gospel, after they prayed, was communicated with such power that there were 3,000 people born again. And then God added to the church daily such as should be saved, because they could see the effect that this prayer meeting and this indwelling of the Holy Spirit had on them. I prayed for many people who wouldn't even listen to me. As a matter of fact, the Lord pointed me to churches that seemed to be somewhat disappointed in me for moving into a greater fullness in the power of the Spirit and a greater freedom, and wanting to reach out beyond my own denominational walls to put God's arms of love around the entire family. And when they would be critical of me, I literally sat there in the church and God said, you just pray for the people sitting here right now that are critical of you, and you don't be angry at them, and you don't you forgive them, and you just love them with grace. And I have watched those churches, and I've watched pastors that even organized to try to hurt me and stop me because they didn't like the changes in my life. I've watched those become some of the greatest friends of the power of the Holy Spirit and begin to be bridge builders, and they're the closest friends I've got on this earth right now. And many people who criticize me and what God said, he said, you just sit here and pray for them. I have watched those people not only put their arms around God's neck and hang on to him, but around one another's neck and around my neck and say, we're family now. That is all the result of prayer, because it certainly wasn't my preaching to them. They didn't even want me to say anything to them, but God answered prayer. And I was in the Coliseum, the stadium in Georgia years ago, after I'd been preaching unity of the Spirit, when Promise Keepers had that meeting, and there were between 40 and 50,000 pastors there, and I'm sitting up right below the box seats, and I had pastor after pastor coming from all of that stadium. I'm just sitting there with a friend, and from everywhere they said, you know why all these preachers are here, don't you, James? You know why they're here. You know the seats you've been sowing for the last 10 years. Look what's happened. Look what's happened. Look what's happened. Over and over they said, and I wasn't even one of the speakers. The point is that when we love people and really care about them and we're willing to forgive and willing to pray, God can absolutely move mountains through the power of prayer. And we've got to have that kind of move right now. This nation's in terrible, terrible distress.
Yeah, we must get back to the basics. James, I've got one more question for you, if I can just hold you for about two or three more minutes. Have you visited the stream today? Stream.org. You won't just get the latest important news. You will get brilliant commentary, Christian commentary, conservative commentary, inspirational commentary on what's happening in the world. You'll get unique, life-changing perspectives, and you'll get every single one of my articles there as well. Stream.org. We'll be right back with James Robinson.
Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
I'm looking at some of the lead stories on the stream, stream.org, which was founded by my guest, James Robison. And just fascinating articles there. Voices from Thomas Sowell to George Yancey to yours truly. And an article, after being punished for praying, football coach files lawsuit to get his job back. So you can find out about that by going to stream.org. James, to me, along with prayer and us living godly lives, the most fundamental, quote, weapon that we have, life-giving weapon, is the preaching of the gospel to the lost. You and I have our own testimonies of God's saving power. But people know you in many capacities. They may have seen your TV show, and you're raising funds to help feed the starving and help the poor in different parts of the world. That's a major part of your own heart and life. But with that, you have seen the power of the preaching of the gospel as an evangelist over the years. It's not just someone responding to an altar call, but lives change. Do you have as much faith in the life-changing power of the gospel now as you did when you started preaching with all your idealism as a young man? Do you have as much faith in it now?
Absolutely, probably more, because it seems that people are not hearing it clearly, shared freely. And I want to say something about the preaching of the gospel. If necessary, use words. Our life is supposed to be an example of the transforming power of God. Our lives, our living testimony, becomes a letter written in the fleshly hearts of other people. That's what Paul said. So the dynamic of our witness, I can honestly tell you that I'm just as effective, and I'm sitting in a restaurant yesterday afternoon. I had 2 hours to spare to minister to a young man who's one of the most talented people in the country, and he has lost his marriage, and he has three little girls, and I'm in there pouring my heart out to him. And I want to tell you something. I'm preaching. I'm sitting at a table, but I am preaching, and I'm watching the power of the Word of God. And I even said to him, I can stand up in this restaurant right now and say, listen to me a moment. Pardon me. And just say, aren't we fortunate to be able to eat here like this? What a wonderful country we live in. By the way, you've often heard it said, God bless America. Wouldn't it be wonderful if America would once again bless God? Good day, and I could walk out. I said, do you have any doubt that everyone in here would be captivated? He said, they absolutely would. I said, why? Is it because I'm forceful? I said, there's something bigger than that. They would know the moment I stood up, they might say, well, that fellow's courageous, or that's unusual. But the one thing they would know, that man loves the God he talked about, and that man loves us sitting right here in this restaurant, scores of us. And I have been that kind of witness from the time God called me to preach. You don't have to have a pulpit to be a witness and to be a preacher. And that is what all of us are here to be. You may not be called as a pastor or an evangelist or a prophet or an apostle or a teacher, but we're all called as ambassadors for Christ to be witnesses for Christ. And I'm telling you, if I was preaching in a church, I would be preaching with such prayerful energy and force that I would be commissioning every person listening to me to become a well-watered garden, to go out and be a fruitful field, and to go forth weeping, but come bringing their precious sheaves with them. That's the way I preach. Billy Graham told me, he said, James, you're the most amazing person at motivating people to become what God said they are and to go do what God said we're to do. And I just never have changed. I will not change. And I think you've gotten to know me pretty well in the last year, Michael. So if somebody asked me to come in and visit with them, I don't think they're expecting to get some watered-down nonsense. I think they realize they're going to get a download of love and truth. Would you agree with that?
Oh, yeah. I'd agree. We've gotten to know each other well this last year. Yeah, that I'd know, that if someone is going to meet with you, they're going to get an earful of truth spoken in love in an uncompromising way. And we don't need a motivational self-help feel-good gospel. We need the truth spoken in love. That's what will change us. And that is the great, great weapon that the church has that is beyond any weapon this world has. And it's a weapon that gives life. Keep setting a great example on the front line, sir. Look forward to speaking with you again next week.
I love you, my brother, and all who are listening. Let's not only pray, let's be an answer to prayer, and let's all be witnesses for Christ. That's why we're here.
Amen. Love you, too. I appreciate you. All right, friends, you know what? I don't have time to take any calls. No time to take any calls. So let me just weigh in with a few closing thoughts of my own. I'll say it once more. I am not a conservative talk radio host. If that was what I was doing, if that's what I was paid to do, I'm not paid to do this. We raise funds to be on Christian radio, right? So we raise funds to be on radio, to have the privilege of ministering to you and speaking to you and fulfilling our calling to be a voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. But if my job was to be a conservative host, or let's just say that was one hat that I wore, well, that'd be one thing. And I'd be on the air in that capacity as a conservative talk radio host. Yes, a man of faith and with core beliefs, but I'd be on the air addressing these issues, and you'd hear me like a broken record every day talking about Obama, every day talking about Hillary Clinton, and every day talking about the elections, and that'd be it. But that's not my focus or my calling. When we address these things, even if you get upset with me for positions I hold, we're addressing them in a redemptive way. We're addressing them in a life-giving way. We're addressing them in a gospel-centric way, meaning, yes, politics is important, but it is secondary to the church being the church. Yes, the presidential elections are important, but they are secondary to the church being the church. Yes, many issues of great concern, from poverty to preservation of life to national security to justice, all issues of great concern. But the answer, the solution to the problems comes back to God's people living as God's people. You know what that tells me? It tells me that rather than throwing in the towel and rather than pulling my hair out and rather than saying it's hopeless, no, we have the solution. It may be one that is distant because so many of God's people have fallen asleep in the midst of a soft gospel and a carnal culture. But the solution remains at hand. And the solution is something that you and I can live out. And within our own sphere, we can see a difference. As we start to pursue the Lord, as we start to live godly, holy lives, as we start to share the gospel with the lost, as we start to be disciples and make disciples, as we start to pray with fervor and with faith and with consistency, we'll begin to see change in our own lives and the circles we touch. And as another does it, and another does it, and another does it, and another does it all around the country, we can have national awakening and national change, and America blessed in a way it hasn't been blessed in a long time. So bottom line, what's stopping you? What's stopping me? Nothing. Nobody. And if God is for us, who can be against us? And we come back to God once more. Knowing Him, having a foundation in God, of fundamental importance, being able to answer the skeptics, the critics, the atheists, and having truth to present to them, so critical in this day and age. Go to my website now, askdrbrown.org, askdrbrown.org. Download the new movie, The Atheist Delusion, by Ray Comfort. Powerful, life-changing, life-impacting. And half of the proceeds will be donated back to our ministry after your purchase through our arrangement with Ray's ministry. So be blessed and be a blessing to us. AskDrBrown.org. My bottom line today, Jesus died fully for you, live fully for Him.